This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Just what I've been going through.
Hello.
My nights are so long. As I watch each hour go by, hoping and praying that someday I will be your guy. One thing I find so true.
Hey, love.
When you are near me,
hey, love.
I go through a change or two.
Hey, love.
Hearing your footsteps, I hurry to catch your eye. Just walk on by.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. It's a beautiful day here as usual. And believe it or not, I was actually able to get the real Stevie Wonder to come and play on the Carol Cox Show, and it didn't cost me anything, folks. But I guess that's the difference between an educated man and a real educated person. But anyway, Stevie Wonder actually exists, and but when you're in academia, you're focusing on other things. And so if you need some help, I know Stevie Wonder, and Stevie Wonder is a friend of mine, and the one you hired was no Stevie Wonder. Anyway. But I just thought I'd play that today, because what is it all about? We are robbed of all this good music and a good opportunity and a little $200,000. But I think what people are afraid to mention here in this town, on this rock called the island of Honolulu or Oahu, and that is we rely on the local talent. We'll displace, we'll bring in professionals from around the world, and we'll treat them real quickly and slight them, the Jim Joneses, the Herman Frasers, and people like that. Let them make one slip up or don't go right, and then you just take a broom and sweep them out. No compassion. Anything foreign or that come from abroad. But if you're local, the Donovans, we are struggling to what we're going to do with them and what have you. Herman Frasier, they hurried him out. Jim Jones, they hurried him out. And the other gentleman, that the coach, they hurry them out, and you don't see the rush. So something's wrong there. There's a bigger story, and probably speaks to why someone can come along and rip you off for $200,000 or more. And now you're spending $1 million just dabbling around and still haven't fixed anything. So I guess local isn't always better. But anyway, on that note, we'll change courses here. But you might give you something to think about. What kind of practices do we have here? A lot of the state agencies will tell you they're recruiting from outside, but ultimately the guy that gets the job is the local guy. So if that's the mindset or the environment that we want to live under, we'll see more $200,000 concert ticket. So anyway, I'm going to talk briefly today about a couple things, the landfill, as I've promised, and also PLDC, Public Land Development Corp. As you know, back in when this was being proposed in 2011, I talked about it extensively a couple times and warning what was to occur and what would take place. Well, now it's at our doorsteps. We know what it looks like. And the problem is we really don't know what the truth is behind it, who's behind it. Big business, little man. Little man standing out front, steering it, holding the reins. But reality, I'm curious as to know who and what big businesses are orchestrating this process, because the governor clearly can't claim ownership to this, and it's too brilliant, too complicated to have been in Congress and struggling to run for governor and show up with this packet. So there is some conniving, something in the background that we don't know. But I would warn all of you to know that this is an island community, an island state, and there are things called carrying capacities. And I would warn that this aggressive, clandestine approach to development is wrong. We have the military, its impact and its encroachments. We have natural energy programs that are coming up. Where is all of this going to go? Where? It's an island. Where is it going to go? If we're going to build 20, 30 buildings here and there and exempt ourselves from the building codes and what have you, as the governor set aside, you remember he had that secret suspension of the laws, the land use laws and the environmental laws. So there's a lot to be asked, and there's a lot of questions that haven't been answered. So anyway, I have a guest this morning, too, from the Big Island to share his thoughts and his observations of the PLDC and some of the interactions that he has. And all of you, if you have any comments or questions or what have you, or thoughts you want to share, 524-1080. But I'm going to go with Glenn Sharoma right now, and he's from the Big Island. So if you would... Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Carol.
Yeah, I'm talking about this PLDC, as you and I have talked. What are some of the scary things that you are concerned with, first of all, and what are your concerns as a citizen?
Well, first, as a recreational boater, one of the things that is very scary about the Public Land Development Corporation. And I'm going to address the public hearing that was held this past Tuesday on November 13, 2012. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I was able to find out and receive from PLDC was the governor failed to approve or disapprove that public hearing. Mm-hmm. In the document that you have, he signed it and he dated. In fact, he dated, I believe, was November 2009. Mm-hmm. But he didn't check off the box whether it's approved or disapproved. So that's kind of... basically, I don't know why that happened, other than I think the formatting of the document itself was You know, it wasn't quite done correctly. Now, here's the other part. On the May 16, 2012, there was a memorandum to the governor, and the governor approved it on May 17. No, he approved it on June 18, 2012. He checked the boxes, everything else. This was for the first set of public hearing that went around the state.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's conflicting approvals on this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next one is this. If you go to the Public Land Development Corporation, the website, and bring out the current rules, the chapters 301 and 302, there's a couple of things that is missing in rulemaking. This comes under Administrative Directive 0901, going back to Governor Lingo time. First, the Public Land Development Corporation failed to redact or delete the rules properly by putting in the brackets and closed brackets.
Mm-hmm.
What they did was only put a strike through. That is not a way that we do business in the state of Hawaii under the Ramsar format.
Mm-hmm.
That was one. Now, on the second thing about the rules on the Chapter 301, if you look at the rules on page PDF page 38, it failed to have what is called approval for public hearing with the deputy AG signature.
Mm-hmm.
That is critical. You cannot go out for rulemaking if you don't have that particular phrase and with the AG's signature. If you look at Chapter 302 on PDF page 48,
mm-hmm.
same thing. They failed to have approval for public hearing with the deputy AG's signature. Now, the deputy AG on this particular case for public lands is Deputy AG Linda Chow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the initial public hearing went all around, in their submittal to DBED, Small Business Regulatory Review Board, it is the proper format with the approvals and with Deputy AG's signature. Now, moving on to next thing, on Tuesday, November 13th, many of the testifiers complained. Even I was watching that on Olelo, and there was a lady, I cannot identify her. She was from Maui. She was very upset that she had to fly in from Maui to Oahu to testify at the land board conference room.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Councilman-elect Gary Hooser, he flew in. You know what I mean?
Right.
And in talking to Lloyd Haraguchi, the executive director of PLDC, basically he says, you know, he's kind of short on the operating monies. But I don't think that's an excuse. So there's a number of things that happened with Tuesday's November 13th public hearing, which I believe it's a violation of rulemaking. It's a violation of, let's put it this way. I think they're going to have to do this all over again.
Okay. Hey, you know, you sent me this, and thanks for doing it, the document that was dated October 12, 2012, the memorandum through through Paul Connery and from Lord Haraguchi. But I noticed that Paul Connery signed it and not William Isler. Now, was there such a rush that it couldn't wait till William Isler returned?
Possibly what happened was at that time Paul Connery was the acting first deputy.
Right, I understand that.
So I guess William was not there.
I got that part, but why did it need to have Paul? Couldn't it wait? William knew it was coming, or couldn't it wait till William returned? I'm just curious. I know the process, you know, normal. If you're not available, the person standing in for you as acting will act on your behalf and sign for. But I'm just curious, what is going on? Is it not that the governor want his name directly involved? Is there a claim he can claim that, that was done while I was away? I don't know. Anything can go in this state. So,
well, here's the other part. The memorandum to Governor Abercrombie through William Ayala from Lloyd Haraguchi, the PLDC executive director, mm-hmm. was dated October 12th.
Right.
But if you look at their public hearing, again, this is from their own website, it was the publication date was Friday, October 12th.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get the approval until November 9th. How is it that the PLDC can go ahead and post something, a legal notice in the newspaper, which I think was made, I don't have where they were publishing that, but on Star Advertiser, on okay. October 12th? What's the rush? Now, yeah. One of the comments I was watching on Olelo, I was watching that for a number of hours. At the end of that public hearing, basically, executive director basically said that they will be taking this out back to the PLDC board.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was November 28th. And if the board approves the current proposed rules for Chapter 301 and Chapter 302, they're going to file this with the Lieutenant Governor's office, and it's going to become a rule.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe there are enough comments made by the public on November 13th that they really need to go back out and redo the rules. Now, one of the things that I learned is I believe, I forgot what the act, but anyway, it was effective July 1st, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
DBIDS, Small Business Regulatory Review Board, well, all the members got repealed or removed. And inside that act, it says that the Small Business Regulatory Review Board basically can say, if you're not listening to your stakeholders, you have to go back out to public hearings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's my understanding that the Small Business Regulatory Review Board already has quorum, at least 6 members. Whether or not Public Land Development Corporation or other agencies with their Hawaii Ministry proposed rules is going to go back to Small Business Regulatory Review Board is questionable.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you one question. I note that you're saying they will go back and redo the rules. Does that mean you support the PLDC, or are most people that I've spoken with just want it to be beheaded and done away with? They don't want the PLDC.
I really don't support the PLDC.
Mm-hmm.
I think their rules, the Act 55 gave them too much power.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, like I said, I'm a recreational boater.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at the statute. I believe was in this past session, where by statute, by state law, the Hotokahau Harbor is now under the jurisdiction of PLDC.
Mm-hmm.
This was basically started out as the Hotokahau Marina Improvement District. But like I said, I'm going to tell you now, when you put something before the legislature,
right.
You never know what's going to come out. And what the motive was for putting the Hotokahau by statute,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why they want to do that, but really, Hotokahau Harbor, where I fish from,
mm-hmm.
there are a number of improvements in there. But there was, I believe, in the last session, additional $600,000 for Hotokahau.
Mm-hmm.
Now, public land can also grab that money, and also possibly the way they're trying to do the funding is by revenue bonds
mm-hmm.
to a developer.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows what's going to happen with Hotokahau?
Mm-hmm. You remember that when Linda Lingle was in, there was a nightmarish thoughts that she was going to privatize the harbors, and she had that gentleman Rice and others that were privatizing, and the average Joe and Jane was actually nervous about it, even to include myself, because privatization of government lands or state lands. Here's what's scary. Abercrombie's administration didn't bother to go through this formal and open process. They place it in our laps, and it's the same thing, privatization. And at least, I think, looking back now, Lingle, we would have seen some bidding, and we would have known up front who was doing what. But in this, it's hoodwinking. It's as if they've pulled the wool over our eyes, and we're stuck. It's still privatization in a grander scale, actually.
Well, I think what happened was that time, I kind of remember that under Peter Young as the former director and chair, they proposed to turn over all the small boat harbors, to privatize that.
Right.
But then that didn't work because I believe there was some kind of legislation. However, I also remember there was a County of Hawaii, a committee looking into the privatization of all the small boat harbors on the Big Island. And I sat through by going to the county council room and looking at all those, discussions and everything else. And basically what happened was, I think it was a member of an 18-member group that was kind of looking at it. And I guess the motivation was they're so frustrated with the small boat harbors under Division of Boating and Ocean Recreation. They came up with a recommendation that they should turn it over to County of Hawaii. However, in looking at all that, I wrote a report, and basically is this. It didn't support transferring it to small boat harbors on the Big Island to the County of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I kind of remember going to a public hearing with the county council in Kehoe. I presented my facts, and basically they didn't move on it. So I think what's going on is this. The small boat harbors, which was transferred from Department of Transportation, the Harbors Division, it went back to about July 1991, I believe. I don't know if that was the right move or not, but the fact that DLNR has it now under Division of Boating and Ocean Recreation, they really need to step up. But one of the things that's been going on is this. I was aware with Peter Young, with then Laura Thielen, and now with William Isla. They always put the burden on they're not getting their funding, to the legislator.
The blame
the legislation.
On that, huh?
Yeah. So you have to look at both sides. What's really going on? But I believe on the Big Island, as far as the small boat harbors on the Division of Boating, I think it's really a misuse of available, repair maintenance funds. And, for example, good example, look what happened. Land Board just recently on Oahu approved the honeybee development at Alawai Smallwood Harbor.
Yeah, wedding chapels.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and that, again, I look back and I think the snakes on the plane, I think the snakes are on the island, because that honeybee project, imagine having a state-of-the-art, up-to-date, modernized harbor at Alawai. What's missing? They don't intend to look at boater safety and recreational safety or just a safety of the boating community, and I say that, and also the natural resources. What an ideal place would be to situate and site an office of marine where the conservation people can actually, the enforcement and some of the managers can respond right out of Alawai. You turn right, you go east. You turn left, you go west. Or you go east and you turn right, you go west. And you're able to respond, right? And the number of users coming out of those harbors. But what are they going to do? You're going to put a wedding chapel, not a wedding chapel, but one. How about that? Is that what the people want?
I don't know, but I'm married already, so I don't really care for a wedding chapel. However, you know where they recently demolished the old shipyard, the building?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of putting a wedding chapel or anything else out there, they should actually build an office for the Division of Boating and Ocean Recreation. Currently, they're in a high-rent district in downtown Honolulu.
Exactly.
That's where the boating division should be. And You know, when I look at their financial statements, basically Ed Underwood has appeared before the, I guess, the Waikiki Neighborhood Board, and a lot of testimonies that Alawai does not pay for itself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's that creative, you know, financial accounting. And recently, that is a public information document. There was a meeting where one of the testifiers said, hey, I would like to receive the financial information. And Chair Isla basically said, well, if you need it, all you got to do is ask for it. However, right now, if you talk to Ed Underwood, the Bodie administrator,
mm-hmm.
he says, that is not public. You have to pay under their rules 50 cents a copy for it.
Oh, yeah, I know that experience.
You know, under OIP, Notice to Requester.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the part. OIP charges 5 cents a copy. DOT, 25 cents a copy. I mean, how come did DLNR all of a sudden come up with a fee of 50 cents a copy? I don't know how that was arrived at. But getting back to public land, not many people know that public land has so far 3 Sunshine Law violations. And the Sunshine Law violations, I believe it's, if memory serves correct, was July 25th, 2012, September 20th, 2012, and also October 11th, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is very interesting is this, when you have a Sunshine Law violation, the requester can file a complaint in the circuit court.
Right.
And, you know, the court will give priority to that particular complaint. But you got to do it within 90 days of the action. So the July 25th, that's no longer viable on the Sunshine Law.
Right.
However, the September 20th, 3 months, you still have some time. And also October 11th, 2012, there's still time. Yeah. Now, it is very interesting on that October 11th, 2012 PLDC meeting that a complaint was filed as soon as the agenda came out. And the Office of Information, who has the jurisdiction over that, did not want to go ahead and open a complaint. Then when the Second Amendment came out, again, OIP did not want to open a complaint. Then on the third one, on the third agenda, they still didn't want to open up a complaint. So finally, I believe they opened up a complaint on October 24th. Now, here's something really interesting for all boards and commissions and even PLC. They're now, public land corporation are now required, along with their agenda for public hearing,
mm-hmm.
to include all the submittals.
Yeah.
This came out, you know, after going back and forth with PLDC. So when the agenda comes out, we have to put all the submittals. And
right.
that's significant.
Well, with the OIP, just know that the governor appointed that person. If we recall, he removed one lady because she didn't want to carry his water. And then now we have someone in. But their policy now is really not to take an action. It's just to write a stern letter, if I could describe it as a stern letter. It really isn't. And so Ed Underwood, and I've come to call him Ed Underhand, because the problem is this PLDC document that you share with me and others, they speak of transparency. But there's one problem. They don't tell you what transparency costs. And like you, you've experienced 50 cent a page, the inconsistencies, and they'll tell you. But just simply to look at them, you still got to pay them. So there's no transparency, and this PLDC is just another layer that it's supposed to be helping orchestrate, right? But
well, it's supposed to derive you know, income for DLNR because of the funding problems on getting CIP projects, everything else. But they also said if you touch, I guess, the Papua and Hawaiian homeland, they have to go ahead and give it back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's kind of scary, but all I'm saying is that I'm not going to wait on the legislature 2013 for repeal Act 55. What I've tried to do is this: just bring some quote transparency, which mm-hmm. is black, to the public, because you never know what's going to happen in the next session. Like the Honokahau, it started out at Honokahau Marina Improvement District, and then by statute it came out as by statute that Honokahau is under the PLDC. So that's really scary. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's kind of confusing what is going on the whole picture. But all I wanted to bring out today was just some of the violations of you know, public process with PLDC on that past November 13th public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I'm kind of interested in is DLNR voting. I don't know where they're gonna go. And then, by the way, Ed Underwood.
Mm-hmm.
He's really a nice guy. You know, I got to know him. I got to meet him a number of times. I've talked to him on the telephone. He's really nice. But I think what needs to be done is kind of look at more transparency. And one of the things that I kind of noticed while watching the TV news, there are a couple of boats that I think sunk in front of Alawai.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a pretty big boat that sunk in the Kaneohe Bay that was damaging the coral.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things is this: Ed Underwood made an internal policy of to get liability insurance.
Right.
Well, how come in the news report saying that they didn't have liability insurance, and these are pretty big boats, so I'm sure they were moored, you know, in a small boat harbor. So that's another inconsistency.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you remember one time that there was a boat that went out to, you know, kind of bad weather at Alawai,
right?
Mm-hmm. And it sunk
mm-hmm.
a sailboat. Next thing we know, you had the Coast Guard, you had the Coast Guard helicopter, and I believe there was a fire department boat that went out, and that sunk. So again, DLNR, especially DLNR Boating, the Public Land Development Corporation. We really need to relook at all those things. In fact, there was a audit, I believe, in 2011 to the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, our friend, I believe he's from Kauai, Representative Tokioka, I believe, basically stopped it in committee.
Mm-hmm.
And I was personally invited by Rep. Tokioka to come up to Alawai for a you know, informational meeting at Alawai.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of still waiting for that.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know if I can make it up there, but all I'm saying is this: what happened to that meeting?
Well, let me submit a couple things here, and Jack, I should say, on this show, I don't, you know. This is not a dig at you. We're just making reference to this. We don't deal to look. The show isn't designed to figure out who's not naughty or nice. Ed Underwood, when you raise that name, to charge me 50 cents, when you fail to educate me and make it available, let's say, information regarding subject matters, and you fail, well, that's one strike. Secondly, when you allow an employee like Wesley Chan to rip the state off for untold hundreds of thousands of dollars and behave in a fashion that you can steal it and get away with it, and then when I come to the state to ask questions, they want to charge me for telling them information that an employee is ripping them off. We move to Maui. We see the manager there that was running two jobs and not working his real job as a manager for the boating and recreation, but running a TSA job, federal job at the same time, exhausting, you know, abusing overtime and abusing vacation time. Strike two. You follow? Strike three. Well, you know, we're not playing ball. But the problem is what they're throwing us is curves. So, you know, I just share with you It's not a matter of he's nice. I don't want the listeners to think that we're trying to assess one's niceties. This is public interest, and this is how and why they keep people like Ed Underwood in place, because there are other officers there that are involved in moving people up in front of the line to get tour boat operations and getting kickbacks. Again, that's under Ed Underwood. So how much can we tolerate from this nice guy? Maybe he is a nice guy to turn his back on the public and allow his employees to behave in a fashion. Rather costly, wouldn't you say?
Well, when I say Ed Underwood is a nice guy, that's personally. I'm not saying about his official capacity of as the administrator for the Bodian and Ocean Recreation.
Yeah.
Okay. I have some concerns with dealing with Ed Underwood. I have concerns with dealing with, you know, the district managers, especially the one on Big Island.
Right.
All I'm saying is this. They need to have a better, I guess, top-down management of small boat harbors under Ed Underwood.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see the abuse as far as repair and maintenance. I was looking at one of a pipeline repair at the Wailoa Small Boat Harbor. I did a cost analysis, and believe it or not, the maintenance people are basically stationed on the Honokahau, West Hawaii.
Right.
They drive to Wailoa Small Boat Harbor,
right.
And they have to be back by 4:30 at the end of the workday. Because they're not going to allow for overtime. And when you do that, you know, between Honokahau and Wailoa Small Boat Harbor, that's about 100 miles drive. It depends which route you take.
Right.
And depending on your traffic, so your net time working at, you know, on East Hawaii is limited. Also, when they go down to Puhiki Land Trap, which is under their jurisdiction, that's even less.
Mm-hmm.
So, you have to look at the whole picture, not only certain areas. And that's what I'm trying to look. I look at the whole picture.
Right.
That's why I look at DLNR. I look at public land. And you got to look at it as a holistic kind of approach for the operation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting that prior to Ed Underwood, it was Richard Rice. I believe Richard Rice was asked to go away. And prior to that, there was Mason Young.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I've got to know, you know, those administrators. I talked to them. Well, I did meet Mason Young one time.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We got to do better. In fact, I would have hoped that a Hawaii-born individual by the name of Ray Sunayoshi. I made friends with him. He was the California Boating and Waterways Administrator under two administration, both parties.
Mm-hmm.
He was fantastic. He would offer help to Mason Young, Richard Rice, and Ed Underwood about planning designings of launch ramps. And basically all three administrators turned him down.
Oh,
and, you know, he's from California, and he comes over here to Hawaii, visits his uncle and, I guess, from Kohala, and he fishes out from Kauai North Small Boat Harbor.
Right, right. Well, anyway, the as you say, holistically, the bigger picture is that now we have introduced another spoke in the wheel. The wheel was already wobbly. The new spoke does not help stabilize anything, and in fact, it just simply lends itself to another angle of confusion. And supposedly, if I could describe it, the PLDC is supposed to be the traffic cop amongst government agencies to help them find their way in the dark financially and developing. But I'll give the listeners some examples. Why this honeybee, or I call them honeybee, the development there at Alawai. This is to save us money, but our DLNR, Department of Land and Natural Resources, conservation officers, who has a lot of their work is based on the marine, the ocean environment, and they're stuck up in Pearl City, up in Manana, all the way up top of the hill. That's where they have their building and their boats are stored, and they have to respond. Yes, it's true they have a boat in Alawai, but then you still got to get them from up there. All of their equipment, even the guns, I've spoken about this, are just stocked in containers. Even the munitions that they use, ammunition, just sitting up there illegally in containers, not properly stored and violating ATF and anything else, violations in the storage of explosives. So those officers got to go up there in the morning and respond. So if you get a violation and you want to do some work, go get your jet ski. If it's stored in Manana, you got to come all the way back down and then find a harbor, number one. So are we saving money in that aspect? What the public don't know is that this new relationship with, there's this element called HCDA, Hawaii Community Development Authority, also that has a Kaka'ako, right? So you take, for example, the sheriff department. The sheriff department really has no permanent home. And so as a trade-off, right now as we talk or speak, the sheriff is right there on the Ala Moana Boulevard behind the old water plant, pump plant, that the Gold Bond building. And as a trade-off, we really don't have enforcement at Kaka'ako or Kewalo, so to speak, because it's now on the HCDA and some of the land has been given back to OHA and what have you. So imagine, if you could, they just with this so-called new arrangement, imagine a boat coming in from, let's say, Christmas Island. And this boat has a crew. And this boat has people that are sick. And they're flying the United Nations the international sign of when the boat is carrying a sick crew member. Who is to respond? Imagine that happened. Can you imagine if that was true? Who responds? Well, it's not DLNR's responsibility because they're no longer over the jurisdiction. It's on the HCDA, and so the HPD doesn't really have an obligation there because it's state land. Well, what I'll tell you is that that happened. A boat pulled into the harbor about 3 or 4 months ago, flying the flag, telling people, telling all authorities that there were sick passengers aboard with bacteria diseases. And guess what happened? They all ran around with their thumbs up their butt, subjecting we, the people, to this. That is something that has never been outed in the news. But all of them, where in the normal scheme of things, people could have responded, but they have dismantled it while trying to hurry and assemble some fancy move. This is what Neil Abercrombie have left you with. It's a threat to life and limb or our safety or our security. So just I assure that with you. Again, we have this the honeybee development and there in the Alawai, but we don't even house and put a proper, the sheriff should be properly housed because they play a valuable role. DLNR, it is their baby, and yet they're detached from it because the leaders and the Islas and others and Underwoods don't have the real concern. They're being driven by some other entity that now call the PLDC, the HCDA, and the OHA and what have you. Even our health department in this whole scheme of things, while making it look good as PLDC, here's what's happening. Even the health department, who is responsible for sampling the waters and testing the waters and making, looking at chemicals and what have you and regulating that, is having to move. And they will in turn be moving up to Manana and their old property. So this is what we don't know. This is what the transparency is failing to share with us and let us know these things. I don't know if you've heard any of that, Glenn, but that's the fallout from this so-called. And not to mention, this scheme called the PLDC is such an elaborate scheme with the others. One man, a retired National Guard, Air Force National Guard, sits down and decides that he has this great idea to fly a drone, writes a grant, gets the drone, gets the money, and where's the drone? Well, it should be where it is in a box anyway, first of all, because he had planned to fly the drone in the same airspace that aircraft either take off or land due to Kona winds or have you not. So this is not about nice guys. It's about people that are inept, people that have some bad intentions, and giving you the right words, and like your documents say, and I appreciate you sharing that with me. I'll post it up on the website at carolcox.com. But in that, as you pointed out, Paul Connery, it says it recommends for approval on 10/15/12, but you say it had already been announced, and it was nothing was ever stamp approved. So that's why I speak the way. Were you familiar with any of that?
Well, I requested from Public Land Development Corporation, and they gave it to me. And by the way, they did not charge me for the documents.
Yep, they emailed it to you.
Oh, yes. I just made a request, and they emailed it to me, which is was really nice of PLDC to go ahead and not charge me, because they're under DNR, and they will charge 50 cents a copy for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's something really irks me. Office of Information Practices just released a informational briefing or their interpretation of the rules,
mm-hmm.
and it is, as far as I'm concerned, it's a requirement. If you ask the agency to send out your agenda by email, well, and it's on the OIP website under What's New or whatever that section is. They're now saying, oh, no, if the agency does not send one email, an agenda by email, don't go to them. They will not enforce Sunshine Law.
Mm-hmm.
They're now saying that all the boards and commissions under the Sunshine Law,
mm-hmm.
You now can ask them to have that mailed to you by the Postal Service.
Right.
And, you know, the State of Hawaii is moving more towards technology and everything else, improving their, you know, the high-speed internet and everything else. Now they're saying, okay, let's go back and mail it. They have to mail it to you. And if they don't postmark the agenda,
mm-hmm.
You know, 6 days in advance, then you can complain to Office of Information Practice for Sunshine Law violation. I mean, I don't know. Are we going backwards? Are we worried about that, December 21st, 2012 Armageddon or something?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
that don't understand. So what you can do is this. You can notify PLDC, Land Board, and whoever you want. Ask them to by email and also mail the agendas to you.
Okay. Well, one of the things, speaking of round and round, and we're going to shut down this hour, that recent event of the tsunami event, the most recent one, I'm informed by several boat captains that we almost had major catastrophe in the harbor itself between a Coast Guard boat and a Matson. Everyone and everybody were just in a panic. And even the Matson had to tell the Coast Guard to back off a bit because you got one of these big carriers trying to get out of the harbor. And it would have been disastrous. So, again, Department of Transportation. Again, this is under the state regulatory body. And I'm hoping to, I don't know if they record from the tower, but I'm hoping to obtain a copy of that event, and I'm told it was nightmarishly frightening for most of the boaters, because if they had have collided, that would have been one problem, and secondly, it would have probably clogged the harbor up for many vessels trying to leave. So anyway, that's what we're dealing with, and this is what the people that are bringing these fancy ideas like PLDC, they can't get right what they already are responsible for. And we can state that over and over and over and demonstrate that. So that's why one of the basic reasons I believe that PLDC should be done away with and go back to the basic needs and adhere to the, for DLNR, there was a 2005 audit that spoke specifically to some of these issues. And they've turned their back on that. So anyway, Glenn, in closing, real quick, any other comments?
Well, all I'm saying is this. I'm old enough that I saw the destruction in 1960 in the tsunami of Hilo. And it really wiped out a lot of businesses. And in fact, one of my relatives who used to live right next to the Wailoa Smallboat Harbor, the tsunami picked up their house. It was a two-story house, picked up the house. The whole family, luckily, was pushed inland. They rode the tsunami in their house. And I know where that house is today. It was a blessing that that happened.
Right.
And in March, I guess, 2011, after it all clear at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I went down to Wailoa Smallboat Harbor. And basically, I saw the surge keep on coming in, and I believe it was about a 6 feet rise up and down, you know, 3 feet, 3 feet, and 3 feet down. I mean, that has caused a lot of, could have caused a lot of problem if there was a real tsunami, you know, destruction in Hilo Bay. Now, here's another observation.
Real quick, we're closing down. Go ahead.
Okay, real quick. That surge took a lot of the sand that was blocking the channel entrance of Wailoa Smallboat Harbor. That was real interesting. So, you know, but the sand came back again because they haven't corrected the problem. And thanks to Senator Malama Solomon, she was able to get in the 2011 session $1 million to dredge Wailoa Smallboat Harbor. And yet, I don't hear they're going to dredge it yet.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, Carol, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling
and getting online.
Anytime you have something you want to share with us from over there, please feel free to drop me a line and come on. And
okay,
it was a
Carol.
Pleasure. Aloha. Thank you so much.
Aloha. Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Glenn. Well, as you can see, we don't solve problems here. And again, so often it's people take the wrong the comments that I make when we talk about. Sure, everyone is nice, and I'm just speaking to that. But in my capacity, when digging through everything and looking for what's broken, everything around you is nice, but sometimes there's weevils in the wheat, so to speak. And that's what I'm looking for, the weevils in the wheat. Hope you understand.
We're going to dance. We're going to dance. We're going to dance and have some fun.
Dig.
The chill that you feel on my back, leave me filled with satisfaction when we're done. Satisfaction of what's to come. I couldn't ask for another. I couldn't ask for another. Your groove, I do deeply dig. No walls, only the bridge. A dish, my cricketish wish.
Sing it, baby.
I couldn't ask for another.
The rhythm where I wanna be. Come on, blowing with electric eyes. Addicted to
to die, baby, you'll realize. Yeah. Baby, you'll see the funk inside of me. Baby, you'll see that rhythm is a key. Get ready, wait a cat, then quit it, quit it. Stomp on the street when I hear a funk group. Blue playing pop pipe, follow her to shoot. Baby, just sing about the groove.
Sing it.
The groove is in the heart.
For the second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108. Just don't let us spin, get you down. Things are moving fast. Hold on tight and you will last. Keep yourself. Your man deep right. Get yourself in gear. Keep your stride. Never mind your fears. Brighter days will soon be. Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu.
Good morning again. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, the second half. I'm always hitting the button, but I know who I am. But anyway, we were talking earlier about PLDC, and the alphabets seem to, that we use, the acronyms, is, really don't tell the whole story behind it. And like many of you out there, I've seen protests and what have you, and I saw this coming because I'm always concerned when government introduces another ploy to fix the ploy that they introduced to us just the previous legislative session that was going to fix what was broken the previous legislative session. And you get this somewhat of a centipede action. Many legs, one head. And what's that head? That head is big business. And, you know, I've always been warned, for example, and this is why I don't believe in partisan politics. I don't believe that anyone, I mean, if you're in a party, that's fine. But if you catch them wrong, your party can screw you just like your enemy. And that's what they're doing here, you know, high, low income, no income, jobs not available, potholes on the street, poor sewage treatments and what have you, and spillage and illegal dumpings and the whole works. But they're spending millions. But again, it's about not about the new angle that they're going, the new fix-it tool that they've found and bring in, and Abercrombie is now bringing in the PLDC, someone brought in HCDA, and all of this, and supposedly, and they traded off land that's going to address the Native Hawaiian issues to compensate them. And but again, the land that they're getting for Kaka'ako, for example, is an old dump. So, again, it's not, government is not running government any longer. Government is being pushed by big business. And that's what's happening. There's, in all of these deals, there's a big business. And in these big business, and especially I'm seeing something developing here, fascism. I don't know how one would describe it because I'm not good at laying labels on things such as that, being a liberal, because a liberal can be just as dumb as a right winger can be in their views and in their way they act in life. But if you stand back, and this centipede that I talk about, this is many legs and appendages are occurring, but there's something in these dark rooms, or there's some element that enables these factions or these entities to weave their way inside of our government, which is supposed to be government, which is going to oversee and dictate the right and the wrong. And I know that's la-la land I'm speaking from. It's utopian. But the real issue here is you take the train, for example. The train, it got its momentum. Yes, we need to move people, and we need to prepare for the days to come when the consumption of fuels and gases and what have you, oil, and that needs to be managed to save the environment, to make it safe for us and healthy and keep longevity in life and on the planet. But look at the companies that propel this thing. Are we really now, if you look, an indicator is just go look and see how the donations are on the campaign donations and who. So big business has gotten hold of government, and big business control even Neil Abercrombie. Big business control even Senator Daniel Inouye. Big business, and I've always thought that the unions that existed were, and maybe I'm wrong, and if you could shine some light on this for me, because I never paid much attention until I've gotten older and try to figure it out, and I could be completely wrong in my perception, but I'll say it anyway. But what happens is that in this state, what I've witnessed, and I'm not familiar with any other state because I haven't lived there very much, and I've been here longer. What happens is that you take the rail, you take, if we have the boilers, the new boilers at the city refuge processing, it's ran by big business. You take the unions I thought were supposed to be not at odds with big business, but were formed because big, quote, big business was the enemy. But it seems that big business want to put in the rail, and the unions naturally want to increase jobs, but you can't distinguish or discern one from the other now, because the big business rarely said much. You had Kiwi, you had Parsons, Rinkelhoff, you had all of these people they didn't say much, but you had the unions carrying the torch or carrying the flag, and still is, because they're getting jobs. So have we become a fascist state, or have we always been? I don't know. We talk about the Big Five. Was that the driving mechanism in our economy always? Is that how we prosper? I don't know. But there's a lot to be desired, and so many broken pieces. And I've come to learn to accept it that these broken pieces will never, ever get fixed. Because, again, in some instances, to fix them would be an admission of failure. So instead of returning back, it would bring attention. We're going to fix something, the landfill, let's say, well, then you would be admitting that you've operated the landfill illegally, improperly, and unsafe, and in an unsafe fashion. So the idea then is to bring newness, a new idea, the PLDC, and bring other things. And when you step back and look at everything that are a major scale, the city H-Power, owned by the city, but operated by big business. Couldn't the city possibly save money by hiring people in the city to manage and have the expertise to operate these facilities? Do we need a Covanta to run it? Do we need a Honolulu Resource Recovery? Do we need these big companies? Because right down to the actual buying of a license plate or buying a mop, the taxpayer is charged for that at that facility, for example. There's a running tab. So is the government running these things? The government come and justify constructing it. But the reality in these instances, it's run by some big business. The landfill is operated by Waste Management. Waste Management, Inc. And there have been a number of obvious missteps and failures there at that landfill. The city owns the landfill. The city has people there operating, overseeing it, like Wayne Hamada. But how is it that we can need this landfill, build it, and then hire it out to someone? And here are some of the greater dangers in that. For example, I'm going to list a few blunders there at the landfill. In 2004, there was a letter as part of a Newsettle 2006 notice of violation. So where they were, the big company, Waste Management, was operating it and not recording the leachate, allowing a number of things to occur that were in the gas issues. Where was the city in this? The city didn't tell you anything, but then they would say, well, we're going to do more development. We're going to implement some changes. But the changes that were needed were already, the operation needs were already there. They just failed to keep oversight on the company that managed the landfill. And so that was a stability issue. Some of you may have remembered that there was a concern that the landfill could shift and slide down and an avalanche and causing harm to the environment and possibly people in the surrounding area. Well, how did it get that way anyway? Big business was operating it, and yet the city owns it, and where was the oversight? They justified having these positions to regulate it. And it's about money, first of all. Because at the landfill, the city has the scales there because they charge per ton for trash to go over, but they pay the private company to manage it. So the city wants to make sure that they keep control over what goes in and regulate the amount and what is charged, and they know the dollar amount. But at the end of the day, how much money is paid to the big company when there's a violation? Who pays the violation if, in fact, it is a fine issued or levied? Well, what happens is that the state health department, and what we saw here during this last event with the medical waste, if the whole story is told in one setting, I think most of you would be horrified and would draw the conclusion, as I have, is that the Neil Abercrombie administration is about big money, big business. Because you see, ultimately, it was Neil Abercrombie under his administration when this transpired. It was Gary Gill who ran to the top of the hill and presented a big lie that they had had a 100-year storm when, in fact, Gill knew and should have known, and he was there at the site and had been informed, and his inspectors had actually gone there and documented that they had a breach in one of the cells that were holding water and millions of gallons and posed a risk or threat to collapsing and probably impacting the power plant, the Kahi power plant. But whatever happened to the violations? They got on TV and told you. What was the penalty? Well, again, that tells you big business has some control over our everyday lives. The big business that managed that, are they unionized? This is what's scary. Are they unionized? The union say to the city, well, you got to have the drivers as union. But are the unions demanding that the landfill managers or waste management become unionized or hire only union people? So there's a real mixed message there. But with the medical waste, the higher you go up the ladder, the worse it gets. The EPA did absolutely nothing. They even, and I have the documents, they even engaged in writing the press release for the company and then agreeing when, in fact, they should have laid the, you know, level down on them and stuck them with massive fines because of what was done and their recklessness and their poor design of the landfill, those cells, and there were issues about how it was laid out. But again, I'm offering this, and some of it is rehashed, and some of you have heard it before, but I'm just trying to share with you from my perspective, from the little bit that I know, the conclusions that I'm drawing and the opinions simply say that we're not governed in truth by the government. We're being governed by business. And their every action translates back into the government, and the government either is aggressively seeking to conceal their shortcomings or their failures and selecting their inability to regulate or unwillingness to regulate, so they implement another law or they implement another rule or they say we need more money. And in these instances, you know, they, for example, the Department of Health under Neil Abercrombie and Gary Gill today refused and have reduced the number of inspections of the landfills. And why? Because if you inspect them, there's a record, and the people like me and yourselves out there can ask for those records. So while they may go and view the site, and I'm informed that within the health department under Steve Chang, in the solid waste branch, they send them there, their inspectors, if they send them there, but they don't want them to create paper trail. And so they've reduced their number of inspections. Why? Because they're trying to protect this poorly operated, malfunctioning facility that's called the landfill. Because they were busy. They're now trying to find where you put a new landfill, but they know they want to keep the landfill there at Waimanawa Gulch. So you don't want any negativity there to distract that. So you are now serving, you allow violations to occur. You know they're there, but you don't go and document them. You don't go on a regular basis, unannounced, to inspect. Because to do that would be, you're now establishing a relationship that you become the regulator and not a co-conspirator or cooperator with the city and with others that are involved in this handling or managing of the landfill. So what in this, I'm speaking in generalities, but I have the documentation to share with you. If any of you care to write a story or want to look in greater details, I have lots and lots of documents. So I'm just trying to be general to speak, to simply flirt with this issue of how big business is controlling our government. And in doing so, it's a very easy task for big business. Because a couple things, promises of good donations. They will be speaking and they'll all say, well, if we do this, we're going to create jobs. And if we do that, we'll create jobs. And some of you have heard while they were telling you in the media that the boilers were up and operating and everything was working fine and we've reduced and diverting the materials from the landfill to the boiler, when in fact that was an absolute lie. Trucks, city trucks, were still, as recent as a month ago, was hauling solid waste, the bulky items, to the landfill, when in fact they were saying everything is up and running. Why would they lie like that? And even today, the efficiency of that new boiler process that they spent all the money on, I'm told that if the trailers go in, there's a delay and you'll see a long line. And so it slows it up, when in fact it was offered originally, if we do this, we're going to be efficient now. It'll allow us to be more timely in our pickups and we'll take all the kinks out. But there are still kinks. And why? Because the government under Neil Abercrombie, it's about serving big business. I would be appreciative of this behavior if they were to go and use the same trickery and the same tactics to fix the potholes. I'd be excited and willing to be tolerant of them if they were to go and aggressively fix the schools. I mean, being aggressive at this and turn around and don't threaten to reduce the benefits from solar power installation. Extend that. Encourage recycling and encourage solar power. But no, they're going to. So apparently it's about the money. Either the government's not getting the money and they see it, or big business not getting it. But don't be fooled. I don't believe that our government is for the people. I believe that we have lost control in that sense, that government is operated and influenced by big business. So what happens then? The state health department on the landfill, for example, want a fee increase for the disposal when you dump they want a surcharge. It's 35 cent now. But they want to increase it. Steve Chang wants to increase that surcharge, and they've gone to the legislators and asked for this time and time, and the legislators say no. Why? Because big businesses know you shouldn't be increasing and taxing us like that. When the reality is, it's the city owns the landfill. Why would the landfill operators object? It's the city's prerogative. But they want to raise it upwards a dollar or so per ton. Here's the problem. If you're not doing any inspections and you choose not to do any inspections because you don't want the public to know and you just want big business to operate the way it pleases, why do you need any more money to do no inspections? Again, it's about money, and what will happen to that money? Create jobs? Or have another fund that you can divert to some other place. And this is the stability, the slipping, the waste capacity as of the end of 2004 had for 1 year remaining with the permit due to expire in 2008. The way the health department has handled this whole process, and we need a landfill. Let me back up. I fell off of that disclaimer. I am for the way we operate today until we become more efficient in recycling and come up with better programs. We'll forever need a landfill. If not, we'll see every road and every canyon littered with trash and everything. So in that sense, we need a landfill. Unfortunately, we can't get past that. But the fact that we do have one, it should be managed and operated properly and sensibly. But this Blue Ribbon Committee that existed, and I spoke briefly about it last week, this Blue Ribbon Committee that is to seek out landfills is just a ploy because, as I said to you, the city was there arguing against the State Land Use Commission and saying that we want to go beyond July 31st to dump trash in the landfill. And they won, 5-0 voting of the Supreme Court. So the question is, how then are they able to get away with this? Right? How are they able to take this behavior and the state does nothing about it? The landfill could not provide waste capacity to permit terms. Well, the state never wanted to shut down the landfill because they're there to cover up for the city. And again, we need the landfill. The state was there. And Waste Management did an emergency ash toll stability berm in 2005. If you remember that, there was some issues and citations that was regarding the slipping down of it. 2006, NOVs were sites a major operational failure. And the DOH, the EPA, these violations that exist were violated. No major fines. And when they did implement or place fines on them, the city, they came up with some constructive sentencing type deal where the city would buy more equipment to operate the landfill and train its people. That's not a punishment. So the question is, with this landfill, is it really being operated efficiently? Is it the best interest of the people? Is it a big business controlling now? And somewhere in the contract that is not being disclosed, I'm looking at it and thinking, I recall reading somewhere in that, and I'm going to recheck again, but something to the effect that as long as the landfill had capacity, then that contract would exist. So if you're reducing so much flow to the landfill, do you think that Waste Management is going to see that its profits go down? Because if they're being paid per ton that goes over the scale, and if we're diverting that to the H-Power, then what and how do they get compensated for the profits that they are losing? Again, I'm sharing this because it's big business, and I'm trying to offer this one to show, and yes, it's somewhat connected to the rail because it's the same operators, the same government that lend itself to, oh, we need this, we need that, we're going to build it this way. But the reality is if the train is put in place, you'll still have the same kind of poorly managed, poorly planned, costly behavior that the government, whoever the governor is at the next during the rail or during those times, it'll be, if we continue on this path and the way we handle things, it'll be covered up just like they're doing now. The sewers, big business, cities, you read the paper, and just yesterday I drove around the city, and the amount of work going on here and there. The same streets being dug up. Either someone needs to say, coordinate with each agency and say, look, we're going to be digging at Kapiolani and Ward next month. Send out a request. Do anyone else have any need to dig this up? The same area, anything to put on the ground? If so, they should coordinate. But you look at it, it seems that one company to come in and dig and put, do its work and then cover it up and leave. And next week, another company comes along. And that's a sign and a suggestion that truly business is running our government, because the planning, we have city planners. Where are they in the scheme of things? So I can only hearken back to the days of Mufi Hanneman with the rail as it was getting up and trying to promote it, and the big trucks driving around City Hall and blowing the horns. Yes, the union, they're going to make some money and they're going to have jobs, but what was their connection and how they've done it to accomplish this? The use of donations from unions, the backdoor behavior of unions to get done what it is that Kiewit, Parson Brinckerhoff, and others were seeking to accomplish, and either also those that were in Pittsburgh, Bombardier, and Ansalda, and all those people. Were they funneling money to the unions? But either way, the government has actually lost control, or never had control, maybe, of big business. There's no real fine line, or defined line, I should say, where we can look at them and say, the union is over here and is going to stand up for the union people and demand, and that's their right. Or have they gelled so well that some unions will get great benefits and some of the workers will be, but will they stick them and say, you will have to hire union people on some of these jobs, mandatory, or have some fees that the state put in place that no matter who gets the job in the private sense, here are some rules like federal law says Davis-Bacon. Are the unions demanding those things? I don't know much about unions and what they're, but I'm just saying that this is what we have with where government has relinquished, have invited big business in bed with them, and big business get to turn off the light, get to tell the government when to wake up, get to tell the government what to do the next day, because they're busy trying to stay in office or line their pockets or do favors for friends who might hire their relatives or what have you. And that's where you and I are left out in the dark, so to speak. We're not part of this game. We're the ones who drive down the highway and are frustrated because the roads are being built. We're the ones who pick up the paper and see yet another sewage spill. We're the ones who see that the trash wasn't picked up today. That's what we see. But the real managers are so busy and in bed with big business, you can't tell one from the other. But the in 2010, back to the landfill, another blunder is that they, in 2010, the West Berm, there was a notice of violation with installation of the wrong liner at the landfill. How did that happen? Where were the city people involved that are hired there that we, you and I, as taxpayers, pay? There are positions to oversee this. But instead, hey, that's big business. Just let them alone. Stay away. And they get to operate loosely in violation, and it is very costly. So that is the real indicators, and I'm not a paranoid person to sit here and tell you big business has taken over the world. I'm saying to you, just in a conversation, I should say, that what we have here is a discussion that should be taking place in every meeting, in every city hall meeting, in every city council meeting, to come and ask the real question, how much money does it really cost to operate the landfill? We probably could save a lot of money if we were had to have greater oversight. Why is it that the inspectors for the city, they have wastewater people, they have land people, they have all of that. Why is it that when these things happen, it's the state that comes in to regulate? And you never hear anything about we're fining the city. Or they get together, they huddle, and a person like myself, I go to the state, they deny you the records, they won't provide you the records. And that's the way the game is played. So they put a poorly planned, poorly designed, the improper liner in the landfill. What do they do to correct that? How much does it cost? How much tax dollars does it cost? So, again, December 2010, there was a stormwater overflow to Coalina, out in that area in the Pacific Ocean with the medical waste we talked about. What happened there? Where were the big fines? Nothing. So, it's crazy. The Kettleman City landfill collapse that occurred in California, costing millions. The same person, Rick Von Pine, Dr. Rick Von Pine, designed and implemented the same things in the landfill here. It was he who had role in designing the Kettleman City landfill that spill collapsed. And it is he who helped design the landfill here. At what point would you think the city or the state government should say, we won't tolerate this. We know who you are. Why are we using this person? And instead of taking that stance, the state, under Neil Abercrombie and Gary Gill and the EPA, went to cover it up by lying and saying that it was a 100-year storm when they knew that it was an actual. In fact, if you want to track this, go look at the online newspaper, Civil Beat, where Gary Gill had given a statement, and I ended up correcting them, and they printed the correction to show that Gill was not being accurate in his comments. But why would they do that? I mean, if they're government, why would they do that and not protect and provide the straight skinny to the people? Don't know. But again, big business has taken control. And I honestly believe that over there at the PLDC, over at the harbors, there should never anybody putting a wedding chapel there in the Alawai. Truly, I believe that is the defining decision, that we have so many things to ensure that the operation of government and the safety of the people. And imagine having a rescue boat to be able to respond right out of Alawai. But instead, big business wormed its way in and takes precedent and its desire. And I know some of you are going to say, well, yeah, that's they're generating revenue. Yeah, but the amount of money that we're spending in gas and vehicles to drive officers and to house them up the mountain to come down to respond would eat up all of that profit in a matter of a month. So it's something bigger that we have here. The problem is it's big business has taken over at Kaka'ako, at Kiwalo, and all of those areas, the proposed development. And Abercrombie was pretty smart about it, but I still think we have control. If we should demand, the taxpayers should demand that we do away with this PLDC. We don't need them. It's another layer of government that we don't need. It's privatization, and you're not going to have any control. I just tell you that. You don't have control now over the, while it does not exist. So another layer, again, the corporation, what isn't clear is a couple things that why I think we should do away with it and not allow it to exist. Just the mere fact that it is a quasi-government, what portion of their activities are accessible to the public? Can they declare that they are a private entity and not disclose anything? We haven't addressed those issues. Like the Aloha Tower Authority, they get to operate as part of government or any authority, like NELHA, the National Energy Law, the Laboratory of Hawaii at Big Island. It's a so-called government agency, but also a private agency. Are you allowed as a citizen to access those records? Do they give you the same treatment? Is the law requiring them to? Or can they declare? And you'll find, I can answer some of that for you, you'll find when you send to Office of Information Practices, you will get a very lame letter saying we've written them and we've asked them to give it to you, but the OIP won't take any action. So this is a grand, grand setup by Neil Abercrombie, Donovan De La Cruz, and the other legislators who... And I gotta say this. We are told every morning before we wake up and before we go to bed, you have to watch out for the Republicans because they want to privatize everything. They want to take it and give it to big business. And they want to shrink government. But the reality is, it's the Democratic process, it's the Democrat Party that is actually doing just what they're warning you about. You have no control. It's privatized. It's so dumb, again, that a person under this regime and this theory and this practice can buy a drone. And the dummies run around bragging that they're going to fly this drone over the harbor areas to make it secure. Not thinking that a Hawaiian Airlines flight coming in may collide with it. Not thinking one taking off may collide with it. I mean, right in the takeoff space. This is where the harbor is. If you don't believe me and if you look at the way the aircrafts are taking off, you'll see they fly right over the harbor areas. Now, where's the brains behind that? Again, if one scenario occurs like that, then what else? How much thinking is really going on? Is it just money? And the guy got to buy the drone and he got his grant and he did his thing at the expense of the public. Now they're trying to sell the drone. Problem is, what about national security? What about homeland security issues? So I'm not being critical of any one entity, but just to share with you, with the way things are going in this state, here in Honolulu and the island itself of the state of Hawaii, we have very little control. And that control that we do have is jeopardized by the manner in which the party in place today And they're courting big business. And I know that their big business has developers and all, but I don't believe that we get the best deal when we engage with the, and I don't believe that our politicians are there to ensure that we, the people, get a best big deal or better deal. I believe that they are looking for better deals to and pad their own pockets and wallets. That's what I believe. That's what the evidence points to, because some of these ideas are just stupid. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, Carol, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to say something. I talked to Lieutenant Governor Schatz on another radio station this past Wednesday, and I told him about, you know, we just celebrated Veterans Day over the weekend, a long weekend that we had. I went to my dad's grave. He was a 442nd veteran. He died, served his time in the Army, proved himself for loyalty to be an American, you know, because of what they did to the Japanese during World War II and internment camps and everything else. There was a fellow veteran next to my dad's grave, also a 442nd veteran with his family. I talked to that veteran. I wished him a happy Veterans Day, and he was there to pay his respects to his departed wife who died some years ago. And I said, oh, how are you doing, sir? You know, how's life with you now? He said, unfortunately, he has to leave Hawaii. I said, why? He said, the cost of living is too high here. The property taxes and this and that is getting too ridiculous. His children moved all to the mainland. They don't live here anymore. And he's with his son and his grandchildren and his daughter-in-law. And, I said, so are you ever going to come back? He said, no. If he does come back, when he passes away, his body will be buried next to his wife here. I told Governor Schatz, what is your administration going to do for this people who have to move because the cost of living is so high here in the legislature, Democratic legislature that controls everything? This man grew up here in Hawaii. He volunteered to fight the Germans in Europe, had to prove his loyalty to the United States by doing this, comes back, gets married, builds a home, lives there for 70-something years, gets a family, and now he has to move because he can't afford it. What can you do? He said, oh, sir, thank you for sharing that story with us. Thank you for your dad's service. But, you know, a lot of people need to budget themselves, you know, in Hawaii. They have to pinch here, pinch there. And he said the high cost of medical, you know, it's going to go up, and then the energy, electricity. He really didn't answer the question.
Well, I can help you on that one. They're not going to do shots for you or me, but all for the big companies.
Right.
So that's,
they don't give a damn. They don't care if you're. And then they had an article in the Star Advertiser about the poverty level. It's was projected by the, I don't know if it was a state or whatever, that it's much higher than what they predicted. And it's affecting the elderly and the young people who get out of high school and got to look for a job or go out from college. They can't live here.
You know, I took the day to just talk in this fashion because some things are missing. The basic fighting elements are missing. We're losing it. And the shots and the Abercrombies they seem to be getting rounder and rounder at the waist like myself, so they must be living good. But then they don't seem to have any shame. They want to continue to implement and invoke these weird, nightmarish approaches and practices, leaving things broken, and going to introduce things to fix what they should be fixing anyway.
There's no solution.
Right. Yeah, the solution is vote them out like we keep the Republicans out. Send the same message. You know, I mean, stop voting for the nice guy, because at the end of the day, grandma and grandpa and the grandkids and you will be moving out of here, and then we'll have a new Hong Kong.
Yeah, I can't wait till Mr. Inouye steps down from Congress for some reason, and then we get somebody else in there, because he has too much control over the local politics here and up in Congress. And
well, it's the culture, my friend. When Mr. Inouye leaves, it'll probably get worse before it get better, because, you see, the young boys hadn't learned. They've just learned to look up with awe and look in the faces and the throat and the mouth of big business. And they see themselves as being successful. They don't see us as a people. They're not looking for our welfare. And this is a new generation of politicians.
They just want our votes. That's it, so they can get in office.
Yep.
But after that, you're screwed.
Yep.
Thanks, Carol, for a great show.
Thank you.
A lot.
Well, anyway, what goes on with this is it's mind-boggling, but I have one little parting comment for you, and that is, remember, like I said last week, your vote is the most precious thing, most valuable thing, and the last thing that you own as an American. And if you haven't learned to value it, I'll give you an example how valuable it is. Look at the amount of money that was spent in this last election. A couple billion. Just to get you to vote for them. If you don't think your vote is valuable and you have yet to sit down one day and go, how valuable, you don't need to take it to an assessor. Think about that. That's the only time big business come to you. They spend all of that money because they know you have the power. The problem is, do you have the guts? And if you got the guts, you'll have the power. So start thinking in these voting processes. And even though we voted some of them in and they're evil, we can go back and have a recall. Let's not take it laying down. Let's say it's our government because we know it's our government. So I'll see you next week, and we'll talk some more, and we'll talk about DHHL and many other issues. So thank you for listening, and hope everything is well. And by the way, the bus company called, and I had posted some pictures up of a sprinkler head and washing the bus stops and seeing people standing in the highway. Roger called me, his people called me, and they are taking care of that. So. Thank you again, and appreciate you listening.
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu.